Have
well,
we
only
have
one definite answer. How is nationalisation going to get more production, Miss Lee?
Nationalisation will maintain production, leaving aside difficulties of shortage, international shortages of raw materials. Because I went around the steel constituencies during the elections. I don't know if Mr. Eccles spoke in steel constituencies. I don't know if he spoke to great audiences of steel workers. But whenever I went into the steel constituencies, I found that they were enthusiastically in favour of having their industry brought under public control. Now, don't underestimate the importance of the point of view of the men who do the work in an industry.
Well, I don't underestimate it, but I don't believe for one moment they're really concerned with who owns the industry. What they want, as do the workers in the coal industry or the railways, is they want a management which will have good relations with them and where they can work and feel that they're happy. Now, there's never been any disputes in the steel industry. And furthermore, the production has gone up exceedingly well since the war, and you are quite wrong, Miss Lee, in saying that it was in the hands of private enterprise, as though there were no government control.
I know. I qualified that. I said the government had the responsibility and a great monopoly.
Yes, but the government had all the control that any government required. After all, in the war, we didn't think of nationalizing the steel industry. They did everything that they could to assist the national effort. And I want to take you up on one other point, and that is a constitutional point. You said we ought to accept some act of Parliament that you put on the statute book. Did you accept the Trade Disputes Act? You went to the country and said if you got in, you'd repeal that act. And every party is at liberty to say that.
That
and
I
always
accept.
Does.
That I accept. I'm not quarrelling with what you would do if, by any unfortunate mischance, you became the government of the country.
We will.
But what I am saying is that when the government of the day, elected by the people, passes legislation in proper constitutional fashion, that legislation, when it becomes the law of our land, ought to be respected by all of us.
Well, it's only 3 days ago that the takeover of the steel industry took place. Up to that point, we're perfectly at liberty in the House of Commons to try and turn you out on it.
Certainly.
And you do just the same with us in the same
we
position.
Would do just the same. I think, for myself, my party has been far too lenient with you over the steel industry. I think it has temporized too long. I think it's bad for an industry to be kept in a state of uncertainty. And they've made more than enough concessions.
I think there's a straight clash on this. I don't think we ought to give it too much time. It's quite obvious that there is a straight disagreement on steel. But now what about the other repercussions? Will either of you say that we can, in the light of the rearmament drive, for instance, reduce prices, get the cost of living down? It's rising now. Are you prepared to tell the people the truth?
Well, now, I'd love to go into that, but if you would just permit me...
Yes?
You didn't, Mr. Eccles, answer my question when I said, did you go into steel constituencies in the election, address large audiences of steel workers and ask them their point of view? Because I did, and they wanted the steel industry.
Well, in my part of the world, we have steel-using firms, engineering firms, and there they are very frightened, and quite rightly too, that now they can only get their material from one shop, that is the government shop, and if they're not content with a supplier, there's nowhere else they can go. They're very frightened. They're not going to get the precise quantities and qualities that they want. And I think that's in line with experience. You can't get the kind of coal you want now, as you used to be able to before the war. In fact, you're very lucky if you get any at all for some people.
Well,
I say the British people are quite prepared to experiment. It's a mistake to say we're conservative with a small C. We've always been improvisers. But we're also careful people. And before we take further steps down a new road, we want to see whether the first ones have been successful. And they have not yet. Time perhaps has not yet been sufficient. But they have not yet. Nationalisation has not proved itself. And I think at this moment, to nationalise the basic industry of rearmament is a most reprehensible thing to do.
Well, let's get off steel if we can. As I said before, I think it is a straight clash. But now, what about some of these other domestic repercussions? What about the cost of living? Can we hold out any hope that it'll go down in the next 3 years? What do you say, Eccles?
Well, I think we can hold out no hope at all if Miss Lee's party remain in power. Because they've got to allow the cost of living to go up in order to finance the rearmament program. If they try, when Britain today is divided by issues like this nationalization of steel, if they try a whole lot of new taxation, all that will happen will be that some people will save less, other people will even spend their savings, and no resources will be released. And furthermore, it may discourage effort. And therefore, I see no way of reducing consumption, which both parties agree has to be reduced to make room for defence, except through the blind, brutal weapon of inflation, which is obviously now in action.
Well, of course, 3 years is a long time, but I would agree that there is no immediate prospect of the cost of living going down or being held steady. It's bound to go up. You cannot be living in a world where there is stockpiling. You cannot be living in a world where the price of everything you import is higher than the price of your exports without that in itself adding to the cost of living. The only difference is that so long as you have a Labour government, you will have the fundamental necessities of the people safeguarded in price, even although we have to subsidise. We will see that when they say, give us each day our daily bread, that they get their daily bread and a bit of sugar and a bit of milk for the children and those other essentials, and that that part of the cost of living will be kept down. Luxuries, of course, semi-luxuries, some things we would prefer to call necessities, are bound to go up. You cannot live in a world threatened by war, stockpiling going on at this stage, and not have a rise in the cost of living.
Well, I agree with Miss Lee that the world prices are bound to affect our prices here. But I certainly don't agree with her that the methods of the Labour government safeguard these necessities of life and keep things down. Take, for instance, meat. It's no good safeguarding the price that it is today and not getting any, or not getting any more than 8 penny worth a week. It's about 6 ounces a week is all that we get. And that doesn't keep the cost of living down. Because, in fact, what does the housewife do? She goes out and buys a rabbit and has to pay 8 or 9 shillings, so they tell me. Though when I catch any, I never get more than half that price. Now we're importing goats, reindeer, and people even eating squirrels. Well, it's absurd. And in my own constituency in Wiltshire, which is famous for its bacon factories and meat packing, we are sending packed steak and kidney pies to British Columbia.
Last point, of course, from you, Mr. Reckles, is unworthy, because you are an economist, and you know perfectly well there is only the most trivial amount of processed meat goes out of this country, and the processed meat that goes out of this country goes out of this country in order to bring in about 3 times as much. So much for your smaller part. Larger point about meat.
Not trivial. Nothing is trivial to a housewife who's only able to give her man meat one day a week. It isn't as though she doesn't buy something. She buys imported canned meat goods at a much higher price than we sell our excellent products, which are now sent abroad.
No, you're not correct.
I've seen her do it. My own wife does it.
Yes, I'm sure your wife does it. And I do it. But the great masses of the people of this country cannot afford to do it. I'm not making the claim on this radio that our people are living softly. Our people are living toughly. And part of the struggle over the Argentine is that we cannot afford certain prices on the world market. And as I said earlier in this program, we cannot have everything. We are fighting to get a reasonable price. It has been made harder for us, and I'm not complaining about that, because America, quite naturally and properly, has gone into the Argentine. It has been another great customer. We've had your party, Mr. Reckles, making it harder for us now, bargaining with the Argentine. You've been encouraging them to hold out against your own government by saying, oh, lots of us don't really agree with
this. Well, you will have to pay the price before long.
Yes, and if we've got to pay a higher price than we would otherwise have to pay, part of the responsibility of that lies on the Tory party, because they've been against their own government and their own country, and they've been on the side of the Argentines all through this deal.
If you were to follow your argument to its logical conclusion, There would be no opposition in the country at all. You'd have a single-party state in which nobody ever pointed out a mistake made by a minister, however stupid he was.
Talking about the opposition, I think, Eccles, you said that so long as there's a Labour government, there's no hope of reducing the cost of living. No. Now, let's try and get something definite. How would the cost of living go down if there were a Conservative government? What are the things that we'd do?
Well, you'd have to do quite a lot through the budget. There's no doubt that that if you keep pumping out money at a time when your people are fully employed, there's no stopping inflation. I think we should have to use the interest rate. We should have to see that capital investment was made more expensive.
That means dearer houses?
Well, it might well be for the time being that you had to do something of that sort to stop the excess of money. There's going to be a great excess of money here. We're paying the armed forces more. There are more people in the armed forces and therefore less in production. We have got to export consumer goods, and we mean to do it, to take the place of the heavy engineering products which are now got to be switched over to armaments. All those things reduce what's coming to the consumer.
Now, all that puts up the cost of
yes,
living.
I know.
How do we get it down?
Well, only by a strong monetary and fiscal policy. And I would add, the biggest contributor to that would have to be the government in their own spending. They will have to spend less, or they will see the cost of living continue to rise. That's why I think that under socialism, where you can't stop government spending, you must have inflation.
Of course, what you are really saying, Mr. Eccles, is that if you had a Tory government, you would bring down certain global figures by reducing the standard of living to the poorest people.
Well, you hurt the poorest people much more by inflation than you do by a conscious cutting out of the frills.
Yes, and that is why a Labour government is always maintaining its controls and its rationing and, if need be, subsidising the elementary necessities of the average household.
We can't run away from a rising cost of living. I've no objection to controls over scarce materials in this rearmament period. I believe they're essential, but if you want them to work, you must have national unity. And that, owing to our political differences between Miss Lee and myself, unfortunately doesn't exist.
Well, we're getting very close to the end now. I don't know whether you'd like to say just one or two things in summing up. I take it that there is general agreement on defence, but there is no prospects of getting national unity while you have the two major parties absolutely at loggerheads. Have you got anything to add, Miss Lee?
Well, I think we might all agree that we don't like in this country national unity in the form of coalition.
Yes, I agree. Yeah,
yeah. We believe it is a good thing to have a hard-hitting opposition. Sometimes we would like the opposition to hit a bit harder, but that's by the way.
We think it's
very good to have everything that the government does criticized, but that no one anywhere in the world must have any illusions on certain basic facts. First, this country is arming.
Yes.
This country is arming seriously. We will not allow liberties to be taken with what we believe is our way of life. I would also say that part of the essential business of arming is to keep the great masses of people in this country knowing what they're fighting for, knowing what they're working for, and loving both those things. Now, our Labour government, by its policy of fair shares, will try to do that.
Well, I agree with that statement of Miss Lee's, except I'd like to go a little further. I believe to get the best out of our country, and there's no country in the world that can give more than this one can, we must realise how decisive the British contribution to the defence of the free world is.
Yes.
Both to deter the Russians, but I believe more still to lend courage to our friends on the continent of Europe. Now, I think if we could put that to them and show them that without their best efforts, Europe may be difficult, very difficult, to defend, we'll get it.
Right, well, thank you very much. I think we can sum this up by saying we all want peace, we all want strong defences, but the political parties are by no means agreed on the methods to be employed. Nevertheless, we're each of us confident that if the affairs of the nation were left to us, things would be a great deal better.
You have been listening to a discussion in the weekly series London Forum, recorded in a studio of the BBC. The speakers were David Eccles, Miss Jenny Lee, and Frank Byers.